Kale and Company weekday mornings 6 till 10.
So if I'm trying to curry favor with someone, this is what I always do. I think I learned this from like how to win friends and influence people.
Uh-huh.
I just get them to start talking about themselves. And so then when they remember that conversation with me, they're like, that was a great conversation because all they did was talk about themselves. So
right.
I will try to get them to, I will make them feel, and sometimes it's genuine, most time it's not. I'll try to make them feel like they are the most interesting person I've ever met.
Danny,
I'm really good at doing that.
Do you have a preferred way to enter a conversation with someone you've just met?
It's weird that Anna says that because I've never read what she's referencing there, but her strategy is something I do employ, and I think it might be something that a lot of people on radio employ is when you don't know someone well, you kind of turn into like an interview mode,
right.
Where
mm-hmm.
again, you're again asking that person so much about themselves that it does set a good first impression because they look back, as Anna just said, that was a great
right.
conversation.
So what would be a question? Anybody have, just give me one question. I'm so-and-so, nice to meet you. Boom. What's the next question?
Yeah. Most of the time it's like where are you from around here or something
yeah.
like that? And then if they say yes or no, and then because, you know, I've lived 38 years on the planet. Oh, I'm from, you know, this place in Ohio. Oh, really? I had a friend from Cleveland. Are you from Strongsville? You know, whatever, something like that.
Dan,
so
you
I
have
try
a go-to
to build,
question?
Like, a connection.
It's assessment-based. I mean, if the person has Sperry's on and khakis, I'll probably ask them what they do for a living because, you know,
okay.
they're going to want to share.
yeah.
The Sperry's kicked you off, huh?
yeah, yeah.
Well, asking someone what you do, according to Vanessa Van Edwards, who wrote a book called Captivate, The Science of Succeeding with People, said that stop asking, what do you do? Stop asking that. She says, because, she said, that's telling them that their brain can stay on autopilot, and asking someone that question is really asking, what are you worth?
She's not wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's not just that. It's a way to find further things you have in common. Oh, I do this for a living. Oh, okay. That I know more about you now. I know that you're mm-hmm. either a professional or you do some type of labor or something like that. They say that you're trying to size them up, and it's impolite to ask them what they do because you instantly want to know. She says if. What they're worth, how much money they make, if they, you know, if you can be friends with them. And they suggest the following. If somebody's not defined by what they do, they say it's a rude question. They say, try to replace it with questions like, working on anything exciting these days? Or working on anything exciting recently?
Yeah, build a birdhouse. Like, wait, what?
Right. Yeah. Are you working at all? what somebody does for a living says a lot about them, not in a positive, negative way, but it's a next step to getting to know who they are. You know, you could ask, are you working on anything exciting these days? And the response could be, yeah, we got a new machine that picks the trash cans up and takes it up and dumps it in the trash can. We're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
It's about the same thing.
Yes and no. I kind of agree with her because it's kind of you're basically assessing, like, how much respect do I have to give you? If someone says, oh, I'm a surgeon, or someone says, like, oh, I'm a, you know, like you said, like a trash man, obviously there's going to be a differential in terms of like how much you respect what they do. If someone is excited about what they do and it's more of like a passion career, they'll tell you what they do. I don't think you have to ask them. So I think that's actually kind of a nice twist to be like, are you working on anything exciting? Because like, Shannon, you got hobbies. You do the motorcycles. You like to go to the... what are the bars
I like to go?
You like the biker bars? You like the biker bars? You know, stuff like that.
Right, but I'd rather someone ask you what I do. And I wouldn't, if they ask me what I do for a living, I'm not going to go, well, or what am I working on anything exciting lately? I mean, that's not an intro into what my hobbies are, in my opinion.
Is it not?
I mean, you could say, got any interesting hobbies?
There you go, something like that.
But most people reply, no, I just scroll on social media for 4 hours a night.
But what do you do? So what do you do for a living? That's to me, I would never be offended by that. And I don't think, you know, if someone told me
you
I'm
have a cool job.
Well, if I, you know, if
you know what I mean?
If I said, what do you do for a living? Well, I work at a pet store. Okay. That opens up a lot of doors. You have an hourly job, but mm-hmm. I have pets and most people have pets and,
sure.
you know, you open the door. What do you do for a living? Oh, I'm an architect. Oh, well, that opens the door to a lot of other things. What do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a garbage collector. It's still what someone does for them, whether that they're passionate about it or, mm-hmm. You know, if they're not defined by their job, it still gives you a stepping stone into further interaction with this person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's something that will eventually be addressed, whether it's in the first few minutes of conversation or not. But I kind of like, I don't really like that question either. Even, you know, when I was more permanently radio still, it's just kind of like a boring question, I guess. I think I would prefer something more along the lines of, like, are you working on anything cool? Or asking someone where they're from and having them talk about, like, where they grew up and what sports teams they like. I feel like people are a lot more passionate about that, like their hobbies or their interests versus what they do sometimes.
I just feel like it's such a normal interlude, a question that gets you further into a relationship. You know, if you're at if my daughter brought some guy home, I would ask him what he did. What do you do for a living? I want to get to know him. Yeah. Plus, I also want to make sure you take care of my daughter.
Sure. But I feel like that's a little bit different because you're not really worried about being rude. You're like, I need to get to the bottom of who you are because you're dating my daughter. So it's
I asked him that
different.
Question while I'm cleaning my firearm, so he has a clearer.
There you go.
I think it's worse to say, are you working on anything exciting? Because if you're a trash man, you're not working on anything exciting. Your job's not that important to you. It's just a way to make an income. And that also tells me a lot about
you. On the side, or you're like, you work out, you're part of a band, or maybe you got a hobby. Like I am kind of annoying when I start talking about Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You know, you get me going on that stuff. I have to calm myself down because I love talking about it so much, but I'd much rather talk about that than, you know, I mean, this job is great, but I do have another job. By the way, I told them that I had a disease and that's why I can't. Whoa. I have a,
what? You told who you had a disease?
So I have a full-time job.
Right.
And
they say you have a disease?
Time off.
Oh.
So I told them that the doctor suspected that I had, don't make fun of me, that I have Hashimoto's disease. Because it couldn't be cancer because that's too serious. So Hashimoto's is just kind of obscure enough where it's serious but not life-threatening. And so they were like, no problem, like take whatever. I'm like, yeah, so I have to run some tests. So I'm going to go back to work and have like a Band-Aid on my arm to make it look like they took blood. Let's just hope none of them listen to Philly Radio.
I was going to say.
That is very
well,
deceptive.
Well, you have a job tomorrow.
Well, I have more tests to run tomorrow, obviously, because I'm meeting with the endocrinologist.
That Hashimoto's, it's serious stuff. You can't be playing around
with it. I know
a
bunch of women in their 30s with Hashimoto's.
What is Hashimoto's? Like, what happens to it?
It's like a thyroid condition. It's an
autoimmune
thyroid condition. No, it's more common in women. Men can have it, too. But I know a lot of like cute women in their 30s that have it. I'm like, well, if they have it, why can't I have it? So now I have it. I'm going to get it. Watch me actually get it.
Yes.
Now.
You are now.
I deserve it.
Be careful,
gotta
get it.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
boy,
that's where I'm at.
Ooh. All right. Well, Dan, it's time for Fight Club.
Company Fight Club.
You're looking for a fight.
I am looking for a fight.
Fights will go on as long as they have to.
We know fights equal ratings.
That's right. It's Kale and Company Fight Club with no Kale and no Company. It's Fight Club with Shannon and Anna. But as you know, fights get ratings. So Fight Club sponsored by Tri-County Auto Group. 3 locations, 1 priority. You visit tricounty.com. And today's fight actually comes from both Trucker Ed. I got to mention Trucker Ed all weekend sending great, great videos. But also our great co-host today, Anna, has a fantastic video she sent. And let's roll FC02 is what we'll roll with today, Phil. And then we'll go back to FC01 in a second. But we'll run with two today. First, Anna, why don't you narrate what we're seeing here as some girls outside of Dallas.
So I love this fight because it's not the usual suspects, okay? We got some cute sorority-looking chicks that are just going to town. They're in their nice little dresses. They look like they're on the night out of town, but they are not holding back. They're pulling hair, throwing people, tossing people in heels, in kitten heels.
Oh, there's a
breast malfunction that was exposed. Yeah, so this is great. And she just kicked like the worst kick ever. Oh, smacked to the face, knocked down. So this is just kind of different than your usual just Walmart brawl. You know, we got some hot ladies that are just getting into it.
We'll call that the 3 B's, right? The bar broad brawl is how we'll refer to that one throughout the week.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shannon, any thoughts on that one?
That you're right, Anna. There's an unusual suspects involved in that fight. You don't normally see well-dressed, pretty women engaged in some pretty serious fisticuffs there, throwing people to the ground.
Form.
And otherwise, what was this, a sorority party gone wrong? Or
It kind of looks that way. What do you think, if you were to venture a guess about what they're fighting over, would you say it's a man or something like that?
Likely. What it is. What is it?
Well, one of them got an espresso martini and the other one started drinking it and it wasn't a...
Oh. Yeah.
The one thing about girl fights is they always go for the hair. I mean, it's like your weakness. It's your hair. You could be, they grab onto it and they hold on it forever. And they, if they don't let go, they keep you in a close distance.
Yeah.
No.
You're completely disabled if you don't have control of your head. So.
Right.
It's a good tactic.
I'd wear your hair up on the streets. Just to
yes,
make sure.
That's, you know. The plan,
have you
always.
Ever been in a bar brawl like that?
No.
No.
No, I've never even been in a fight. I've had people like aggressively come up to me and I'm like, oh, sorry. Like, I am the biggest P word.
Really? The thing is, like, they wouldn't know you know the Brazilian jiu-jitsu as well as you do. So I feel like you're kind of like a, you know,
to just lead him in.
It's like a hustler over here.
Whip out some jiu-jitsu on him.
Yeah, well, when I was going to the clubs like hard, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I didn't know Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I'm just like the nicest drunk ever. Like I don't get upset, I don't get angry. I just like want everyone to have a good time, sort of a thing. So, yeah, wow. I've never been in a fight before.
Kimmy suggests on YouTube, it's always over a guy. Real hair involved. What color was the car that they were driving? Well-heeled ladies. This is pay-per-view. YouTube.com/@1210WPHG. Please get into the fun. And Anna, being an expert in fighting, I don't know if Shannon is. I don't want to put Shannon's words in his mouth, but I'm definitely no expert in fighting. But I can guarantee you I could throw a punch better than this kid. Let's go to a highway fight. A kid wailing on another kid, but I feel embarrassed for the one on the ground because his punches are wild. Take a watch. YouTube.com/@1210WPH. Look at those flails. Oh, no.
Word.
Oh, wow. A straight arm. The whole, flailing like a flag on the back of a yacht. Dressed like it, too.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Look at this. Once you got the guy down like that, it's just unfair to keep wailing on him, don't you think? You got him
on the
ground.
The head doesn't have anywhere to go, so it just gets smashed into the concrete. Impressed by both of them. I mean, the guy on the bottom is actually keeping his head kind of up, elevated a little bit, so that doesn't get smacked to the ground.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. If it's on the ground, if his head's laying on the ground, you've got massive impact.
Yeah, on both sides. Yeah, the head can't snap back. So.
I don't really enjoy watching fights unless it's the underdog gets control. You know, like some guy starts fight with some guy
because
he's a wimpy guy, and then the wimpy guy turns out to just wail on the
just
bully
like
guy.
Like the bully fights. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a victory to me. What I don't like is these, which are the internet is just ripe with, is the classroom fights that break out in school that often turn to the educator, the teacher that's in the room. And they can't hit the kids back because they'll get fired. So they got to either take a beating or run off and down the hallway. But there's way too many of those.
Is BJJ something good for kids, or is that like more karate?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you call it?
Oh, my God. I wish if you have, I mean, even if you're an adult, great. But if you have a child, a boy or a girl, doesn't matter. Put them in jiu-jitsu. It teaches them so much about just discipline. It gives them confidence.
Maybe your kid
and
be
they'll be a black belt by the time they're 18. That would be so sick. So
I think so sorry, just before we go on, we got to pick one of the two to choose to enter into our end of the week. I think it's got to be the first one, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Unanimous.
Cat
definitely
fight,
it's the girl fight with the hair pulling and all.
Yeah.
I mean, Dan, did your dad teach you a couple of one-twos, you know, how to...
Oh, no,
to,
I'm a terrible fighter. The thing that you guys might not know about me, but the audience probably does by now, I'm a 6'8 individual, and I've always been tracking, I've always been tracking a couple inches above the others, so I was a kid, you know, towering over people, so I didn't get really messed with too much.
No one tried you.
Nice, yeah.
You can just punch down.
Exactly.
Just like a whack-a-mole on the heads of us peasants.
If you're watching YouTube, though, my punches do look very similar to that last kid we
had. I'm 6'2.
I'm only 6'2, but I have enough tattoos to make me look dangerous. You know, people go, look, guy's got a neck tattoo. I'm not messing with him.
That's a good call.
Fights Get Ratings, Fight Club, sponsored by Tri-County Auto Group. 3 locations, 1 priority. You visit tricounty.com.
Wow. All right. That's an interesting segment.
We'll do it all week, Shannon.
I feel like I'm going to search out a suggestion for tomorrow.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes. Do it.
All right. When we return, we'll get to Pam Bondi in action, axing some Jan 6 prosecutors. in what people call a horrifying purge. These people were, quote, career employees at the Department of Justice, which I don't think you should be a career Department of Justice employee, that the bureaucracy should turn as often as elected positions do. But we'll get into that when we get back. And Trump says he's working on some type of a temporary pass for immigrants in certain industries, like a favored industry thing. You know, mm-hmm. Well, we'll never eat another strawberry if Trump, deports everyone. So right. he's looking into that. I don't, you know, to me, it's either all or nothing, I think, and that's the way
I
to
agree.
Go.
I agree.
And Trump has also outsmarted economists. They're now backpedaling, the ones that bashed his bold tariff plan. I don't know how he did it, but he's these economists are like, wow, he really, I mean, does he know more than our nation's leading economists? Is he a
Who
secret
knows?
Genius?
I don't know. He's having conversations with ChatGPT. That's how he's getting ahead of the eight ball. Yeah.
We'll get to it next. Stick around. It's Kale and Company, 1210 WPHT.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
This hour is sponsored by Spring Dance Hot Tub. Celebrate your freedom to save at Spring Dance Hot Tub. Save $5,000 on hot tubs and 50% off accessories. Buy three spa essentials. We'll get one for just $1. Visit springdancehottubs.com. What a great name. Don't you think?
You a hot tub guy?
Love it.
Do they do hot tubs in Georgia, or is it too hot for hot tubs?
No. They do hot tubs everywhere. I mean, in Florida, it's just, you know, you need a cold tub more than a hot tub, I think. You know, just kind of to cool off. But I love a hot tub, man. There's nothing more relaxing. Oh, it's fantastic. So, Pam Bondi.
Yes. Tampa's very own Pam Bondi.
Good. I'm glad to hear you're a fan of hers. I'm a fan of hers. I think she's fantastic. And she has fired at least three career Justice Department and prosecutors that were working on cases related to Jan 6. And they were informed in a letter, and it just simply said, "Dear so-and-so, you are now been removed from federal service effective immediately. No further explanation." Yeah. I mean, I've been fired for similar reasons. Like, well, we no longer need your service. See you later.
Right. Yeah.
One of them said these firings are horrifying. Yeah. calling it a slap in the face to not only to them, but to all career DOJ prosecutors. Here's my problem. With this, I don't think careers in government are bad for America. Would you agree?
Yes, like with no term limits. Is that what you're saying? Like,
I get, well, we're all, I think we all agree that elected officials sink into this mode to where people are like, oh, yeah, Pelosi, oh, yeah, I voted for her. Things are going well around here. I'm just going to keep on. She's a name I know or whatever. They get reelected.
Sure.
And I do think that there needs to be some limitations on the terms that they can serve or an age limit, more of one or the other. But I also think that exists for bureaucracies and bureaucrats like Department of Justice prosecutors.
Sure.
I think that they, once you're there for a long time, and I think it's safe to say that I think the Republican Party is further removed from a chummy relationship with bureaucrats than Democrats are. I think the Democratic Party has kind of built the Democratic Party on bureaucracy.
Yeah, 90% of the people in government are Democrats.
Right. It's frightening.
That's just a fact. Yeah.
It's frightening. And I think this is one way to even it out a little bit. Justice Department employee said, "No one is safe from this administration's whims and impulses. And the public certainly is not only served by the continued brain drain of DOJ, we are losing the best among us every day."
Signed, you know, the person who was fired, right?
Right, yeah. Well, they say it's an escalation of Trump's targeted retaliation against federal officials that worked on the cases against him and his supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Back in January, they asked several prosecutors still in the probationary period for their jobs that worked on Jan 6. You know, so many people were probationary. If you're probationary, you don't need really a reason to cancel one, right? Look, you're still in your probationary period, not happy with your performance.
Yep.
See you later. This is the first time they say that career prosecutors at the DOJ had been ousted because of their role in prosecuting January 6th. We don't know that that's the reason. More than likely it is. Sure. In my opinion, the people that prosecuted DOJ that prosecuted January 6th people that were like on the grounds that didn't go into the building. They're doing 20 months or four years or whatever.
Grandmas that were like put away.
Grandmas who had a door. Grandmas who had the door open for them by a nice gentleman in a uniform. He's a nice police officer. Let us in and said, come in, ladies. And now, you know, grandma does 2 years. Mm-hmm. Or sits in solitary confinement for a year before she's brought to trial.
Poor granny.
I'm serious.
It's outrageous.
I think this will serve to kind of put away the whole Jan 6, the fiasco that occurred after for years and years and years, left so many people lingering and solitary confinement and in prison and in jail. You know, Trump came along and pardoned them. Some 1,580 people, I think it was, something like that.
Yeah, and it kind of speaks to a point you made earlier, which is, I think, a bigger problem, which is, like you said, the bureaucracy, where no one is voting these people in, and they seem to just sit there, have these cush jobs. That's what Elon and Doge really started to kind of dismantle, is just this bureaucracy just sucking up dollars, and God knows what they do. They can't even describe in a five-point bullet point email, what their purpose is, why we need them, and why we're spending so much money to keep them. So I think it's a good thing.
I do, too. But I think that Trump's first term, when it was drain the swamp, I think most people, including myself, thought of the swamp as the long-serving Democratic lawmakers and Republican lawmakers that have been around for, they served eight terms or whatever. They're in their 70s or 80s, and they just kind of do things the same old way. I didn't consider... until midway through Biden's tenure that it really is the bureaucracy that is more of the swamp, much, much more of the swamp than elected lawmakers there. And I think Trump's figured that out. And I think, he acts on it.
Well, the thing is, at least with the lawmakers, we know who they are. We know their face. We know their name. But these bureaucrats, many of us don't know who they are, their names, what they do, who they are, what their purpose is, what their agenda is. So,
you may just
silently get through the system.
Right. You may know the name of the AG or the head of the FBI, but you don't know the, division chief of the FBI or...
Yeah, the prosecutors at the DOJ. Like, I don't know who they are.
Or the people
Maybe
in the field
really
offices.
In the weeds, you do, but yeah.
Right. So, That's the whole thing. Who was Trump's Sean Spicer? Remember Sean Spicer?
Yes, the guy that would eat the cinnamon gum.
Yes. Well,
he would swallow it.
After he was out of Trump's office of communications and no longer the media representative,
he was appointed press secretary.
Yeah, he was appointed. Thank you for that word.
Before or after Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Probably before. He was appointed.
Congo or whatever.
He was appointed to the Naval Board, one of these boards where you just sit on the board, you make some decisions, you get paid, whatever. And he was fired from the board when Biden came around. So he went and sued the Biden administration for the sole purpose of getting a judge to agree that, yes, Biden has the right to fire this person that was appointed to set some legal precedent so that Trump could come in and knock these people down like flies that needed to get moving on. So, yeah, press secretary. So,
Sean Spicer.
He threw himself. You don't like Sean Spicer?
No, I did. He was just like so awkward and would just like aggressively sweat, and he would like chew gum and then swallow it. That was like his thing. People were like, this weirdo cannot.
That gum's going to last forever. My mother said it will stay there forever, my stomach forever.
Listen, I love Caroline Leavitt. I think she's phenomenal.
Oh, she's
fantastic. I have to say my all-time favorite is probably Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She was just her stank face. Like, she was just not a dude. Do you remember her?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. She's
probably
governor
my
of Arkansas
favorite.
Now. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. She was
I liked,
phenomenal.
What was Bush's W's press secretary? Ari Fleischer?
I don't remember.
Oh, he's fantastic.
It was Ari Fleischer, Scott McClellan, Tony Snow.
Yeah,
and Dana Perino.
Well, that's true. Dana Perino. All 4'7" of her.
Really?
Yeah, she's very, very, very tiny. She's itty bitty. She's almost disabled.
Say it.
She's so small. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say it.
Say it.
When we return, we're going to get to Trump working on a quote. He ran this by everyone, and they said no. Temporary passes for immigrants in certain industries. Yeah. It's okay to be short, but he wants a box. Wants a box for the debates. Remember that?
Yeah.
We'll do this next when we return. I'm Shannon Burke, along with Anna Hummel and Dan Borowski, in for Kale and Company on 1210 WPHT.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
When people started screaming, if Trump deports everyone, who's going to pick the strawberries? Who's going to clean your toilets? Who's going to be room service and housekeeping in the hospitality industry? And then Trump started to toy around with a, quote, favored industry delegation to each. Well, we might give a pass to people that pick fruit or vegetables or whatever. We may give a pass to people that work in domestic industry. And then you have the whole, you're going to have to clean your own toilet crew. You know, these people that celebrities that just utter out the most racist thing. They don't realize it's racist. They're like, who's going to clean our toilets and pick our fruit? Like, that's the only thing. They see the value in these immigrants here, and they just start to think, well, most vegetables and fruit are picked by giant machines now anyway. You know,
I was going to ask. I'm like, isn't the technology there? We got AI down. We can't get a machine to pick fruit.
Well, I mean, and I get it.
Is that a really ignorant thing to say? I don't know.
People seem to just say it's racist as hell. It's just to demand what I consider a slave class of laborers. These are the same people. Democrats are the same people that scream about we need $25 minimum wage to put cheese on a hamburger. We need $30 minimum wage to change an oil in a car. Yes. Minimum wage. But out of the same mouths, they say, but we also need a lower class of worker that we don't have to pay minimum wage to. They're more like slaves.
I mean, get it together. Didn't Jasmine Crockett say something to the effect of, like, black people are done picking cotton. Like, we're done doing that. That's why we need to keep these migrants here, because they're the ones that will do that sort of labor.
Nobody,
like, her words, not mine.
People don't pick cotton any longer.
I know, but she was, referencing.
I get it. And then, the celebrities alike. The L.A. Times, for example, last week had a feature in their video department about a woman who said, I'm speaking out to all mothers and housewives that have domestic help, like a nanny or a housekeeper. Mm-hmm. And they went into a long dissertation on how you can protect your slave from being deported by certain ways. Let your slave know what their rights are, which is mainly saying hide your slave so that the ICE can't come and get them. I get that there's some, for example, the slaughterhouse in Omaha, Nebraska, that was gutted of some 80 employees last month. And people are like, there you go. We can't eat meat anymore because Trump deported all the slaughterhouse workers. The next day, the very next day after it hit the news, their waiting room at this slaughterhouse, the lobby was packed full of people applying for the jobs that were just lost when they deported people. And they were legal people. They were American citizens, white people. They won't do those jobs. It was packed full of people to get these jobs. And which means that no industry is going to die. Hell, Clinton deported some 13 million illegals in his two terms. I never had a problem getting a strawberry. My toilet was clean the whole time.
Yeah. I agree with you. Like, you cannot make exceptions for people. I think if you broke the law, you need to leave. And no one is more angered by this than people like myself, who are legal immigrants into this country, who had parents that waited in line. My aunt waited 12 years for a green card. Who knew that she could just, like, fly to Mexico and walk over the border and she would have got in right away? So no one is more angered by that than legal immigrants.
The nonsense of there has to be, we have to have due process for every single one that's deported. We have to have due process. Then you think about it. If Bill Clinton, he was 12 million, I read that, then I read 13 million too. Whichever it is. Let's say it's 13 million. If Bill Clinton gave due process to every single one of these 13 million illegals, there would have been 4,400 hearings, immigration hearings per day, every single day of his presidency, including weekends and holidays. So it's clear that in the past, we could deport people without this quote unquote due process nonsense. But today, you've got to bring Kilmar Abrego Garcia back here for his due process.
Turning in a weird situation, too. This is a report from Fox and Boston, or NBC in Boston. And this is from a while back, but it's just take a watch. And kind of to Anna's point of the Jasmine Crockett's commentary.
She felt bad, as any mother would. Now things are looking much brighter as they've been welcomed into Lisa Hillenbrand's Brookline apartment.
Tu niña es muy alegre ahora.
Sí.
So essentially in this report, what it is a Haitian family, in fear of being deported, is welcomed into a white family's home. And it goes into detail as to, you know, how they help around the house and such. And it's just, it's...
Why is she speaking Spanish? I thought they spoke French.
Everyone starts the day smiling.
It's a delight. And it's really fun having them.
It's a delight.
What I realized is there's so much prejudice against refugees, mostly because people don't know them.
Lisa says she feels like she has her own personal chef, as Wildande loves cooking.
La ocupación.
Sí.
In fact, her goal is to open up her own restaurant.
Quiero tener mi propio restaurante.
Yeah, but to your point, it's she's a personal chef now.
Yes! It feels as if I have my own personal chef. I guarantee you this woman cleans a toilet here and there as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean,
and listen, no one's making her stay. Like, that's great that, you know, she was able to do that, but you shouldn't be allowed to do that because you came here illegally. Sorry.
But the panic porn about if they deport all these people, then, you know, we won't be able to eat fresh vegetables any longer. Our homes will become filthy and unsanitary. And ditches will go undug and your yard is going to be eaten up with weeds because you're a landscaper. You know, that lady out of L.A. last week who said, well, all of my friends are texting me. My phone is blowing up because today their gardener didn't show up. Who has a gardener?
Molly mentions those people that
I think you'll survive
workers,
without one.
Certainly of the ag industry that's being affected. You've got hospitality industry. Going to a restaurant, even. I mean, you may not have people being able to clear your place, move so quickly, the food being served.
Yeah. I mean, don't they realize how unbelievably racist this is?
It sure is. But, like, even if they're right, which they are to some degree, that they're... the industries will be impacted. I mean, I always kind of just go back to my favorite quote by Thomas Sowell, which is like the there are no solutions, there are only trade-offs, right? So it's like, well, now we have this other problem. Okay, well, you never really solve a problem. It's more just like a trade-off, right? You get rid of the illegals, maybe there's a price, you know, surge with some items, but it will shake itself out. But that is the nature of reality. You're never going to solve any problems. You're only going to kind of make trade-offs about which problem you would prefer.
Barack Obama was nicknamed the deporter in chief.
I know.
And I never had a problem getting an orange or an onion or a stalk of celery, and my yard looked perfect.
And farmers markets, too. You know.
So I'm in my beautiful city, L.A., and I have friends texting me, like, all morning. My gardener didn't show up. My housekeeper didn't show up. My farmer's market was closed. Everyone's scared. Well, this is not going to just happen in L.A. And you 1%ers that only voted for Trump because of money?
Money?
Guess what? You're going to have to do your own dishes or clean your own house or mow your own lawn. And oh, that wonderful produce, the organic produce you get for your brunches?
Gone.
You're going to actually have to do some work around your house. These people are important.
Wow. What a disconnected person.
Money?
That is. For money. When we return, and Trump outs...
because of money?
It wasn't because of money, sweetheart. I cut my own grass, I'm proud to say. And why I do have a housekeeper come in once a week, she has papers. Her name is Glenda. She's from Wyoming.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Weber returned. Trump may have outsmarted every economist in America. How did he do that? Stick around. It's Kale and Company on 1210 WPHT.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
Torsten Sloak, chief economist at Apollo Global Management, has had to admit that his initial reaction to Trump's tariffs were completely wrong. He said maybe the administration outsmarted all of us. He originally said the tariffs would threaten business stability, Wall Street's record highs, and the stability of U.S. Treasury bonds, the employment of blah, 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 blah. But now he's done a complete about face and said that maybe Trump pulled one
On him.
Yeah, pulled one on him.
I love it.
I love it, too.
Yeah.
Let's bring in Phil Abquest for This Day in Music History.
It happened on This Day in Music History. Music History. On Kale and Company.
Today, June 30th, we celebrate the birthdays of Phil Anselmo, who's 57, Andy Scott from Sweet, who's 76, and Russ Graham from The Killer Doors. Single include Best I Can by Queensryche in 91, album include Keep It Up by Loverboy in 83, Demolition by Girls School in 90, Love Gun by Kiss in 77, Metal Rendezvous by Crocus in 80, and System of a Down's debut in 98. Also in 2009, U2 began their 360 tour. In 76, the police raided the home of Neil Diamond searching for drugs. They found less than 1 ounce of marijuana. In 2012, Queen began their tour with Adam Lambert. In 84, Huey Lewis was atop the album chart. And on this day in 2006, George W. Bush and Japanese Prime Minister visited Graceland in Memphis. But lastly, as a reminder, you could always listen to my Saturday Night Show using the Odyssey Rewind feature. Just saying, Chris Forsythe. For Kale and Company.
Shameless plug.
Get it, Phil.
I love the mention of Loverboy. I mean, I saw a picture of them. Was it Loverboy or REO Speedwagon?
Yeah. We just found out that Shannon's a big Loverboy fan. I didn't know if you wanted to comment on that.
I don't know if I was a big Loverboy. Maybe back in the day I was a big Loverboy fan. But I saw, I mean, what was the Loverboy I was thinking about? It was another band that's just recently retired. And I saw a picture of its lead singer. I think REO Speedwagon. And its lead, their lead singer looked to be like 80 years old. Is Loverboy still touring?
They are, but you know they lost their original lead singer, and you know a lot of bands right now are touring, but they don't have all their members or one member or maybe a drummer or you know whatever. So that's kind of the state of the classic rock right now,
right, for the
most part. You know,
is it worth going to see a band that doesn't have most of their members anymore? And I mean
you got to have the key guys there, right? I mean,
in my opinion, yes. Now I will still go, but I will pay full price to go see you know said bands.
So you weren't offended by Sammy Hagar taking over David Lee Roth's position?
No, I
love
that was great. Because there are certain ones that are, in my opinion, like, look at AC/DC when Bon Scott died and, you know, Brian Johnson took over. I mean, that's the biggest example. Both great.
Do they have to sound identical to the original band member, like the Filipino guy?
No, I don't think so.
The Journey guy, yeah.
Yeah, the Journey guy, the Filipino guy.
Now, he does sound identical, but he doesn't have to sound identical, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, I don't know if Journey was looking to for Steve Perry or where.
Well, they found him on YouTube, so. I mean, it's true.
I mean,
that's amazing.
There's hope for all of us, I think, at that point.
That's
right?
Exactly right. I mean, we're on YouTube right now, so.
I'm too early for me to sing, although I'm I don't know where I don't think I'd fit in the Van Halen department, but. Interesting stuff. And who would ever imagine Neil Diamond would have a drug problem? You know, I mean,
everybody at that time, all the police were going after all of them. But you wouldn't think necessarily.
And it was
that,
Neil Diamond and not Neil Young, right?
That's correct, Neil Diamond.
I mean, look, Neil Diamond or Willie Nelson. You know, I mean, you know Willie Nelson. If you see his bus on the tour somewhere, you know it's a hit. If you pull him over, you're gonna get some contact. I've been on that bus once when he was
really?
In Austin, Texas. Yes, a buddy of mine played bass for him, and we walked up the stairs of the bus. He goes, "Let's go see Willie." Walk up to the stairs of the bus, you know, and you slowly realize that there is a halo of a cloud of smoke that's about once you get into the bus, you're fully standing up, it hits you about mid-chest level. So, yeah, if you spend any time in there, you could definitely
get it. Did you partake, or is that not something I'm allowed to ask?
I stood there, which was meaning I was kind of partaking.
Right.
Yes, I did.
Involuntarily, yeah.
You didn't inhale, right?
Well, I could have had a choice. If I needed to breathe, I was going to have to partake. But, you know, they used to hassle that poor guy because they knew the minute they pulled him over, I mean, that guy's a national spokesperson almost for marijuana consumption. And look at the genius that's come out of the guy. He's stoned to bejesus almost his entire career and one of the most revered country music writers and singers in history, you know? Hi. And let's not forget about what heroin did for the jazz industry. I'm just kidding, kids. Don't do drugs. We wouldn't have John Coltrane without heroin. Sorry. We wouldn't have Miles Davis without heroin or cocaine.
Getting made fun of for a Miami Vice kind of look. Magnum P.I. Is this appropriate to wear to work, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're considered a producer, so it's okay.
Yeah, is that what it is?
He looks like he's spoken down
from
here
another
in
producer.
I was just about to say you're on a.
Well, that's
Florida.
What it is. You know, I gotta dress the part for you guys. So.
Like where did you? Is that what you're wearing?
Yeah,
you're not. Oh, all right, I'm impressed.
Okay, yeah.
Where do you find shirts for 6'8"?
Amazon. Jeff Bezos.
Jeff
it's everything.
Bezos.
Answered
yeah,
everything
exactly.
there, Shannon. Back to the start of the show.
Well,
it was a great.
Thanks for the music.
You guys.
This day of music history is fantastic. Yes, thank you.
You here
thank
all
you
week?
Very much. No, I'm here tomorrow. We're here tomorrow, and that's
Monday
all I know
and Tuesday.
Of. Monday, Tuesday, mm-hmm. and I don't know what you got on Wednesday. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dan. You're awesome. Thank you, Anna.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks
I'm
to
get
Stalker.
My band-aids ready and go to work.
I just want to say one thing to Greg Stalker. It's time for a haircut, buddy. You're looking a little hippie-ish. And Dave, your engineer, is something special. Yes. Thank you to him as well. And we'll see you tomorrow, filling in for Kale and Company on 1210 WPHT. Have a great day.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.